It's Sunday morning. Time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Thank you so much for joining me. We get ready for the Bears to play later this afternoon. Be nice and toasty for those folks from L.A. who are going to come into Chicago in the middle of winter. Speaking of things toasty, things are warming up in the controversy, if you will, about how we manage for waterfowl and wetland-dependent birds. So I'm bringing in my expert from South Louisiana, New Orleans, Carrie Lupt. You've heard on the air many times with the Max McGraw Wildlife Foundation. Carrie, I needed to bring a Louisiana expert in to solve a Louisiana problem.
Good luck with that, Charlie. They've been trying to do that since the days of Steve Wild.
So, Carrie, I might have had a little tough time hearing you there. But anyway, let me set the stage, Carrie. A very well-intentioned and respected senator from Louisiana, Senator Kennedy, has issued a request to the Fish and Wildlife Service that they review the practices of flooding crops, particularly corn, for waterfowl throughout the Mississippi Flyway. And I say, Senator Kennedy is well-intentioned. I know he's an avid waterfowler, duck hunter, but I guess, Carrie, I'll tee this up by saying he's really been given some very bad advice by individuals who have decided that science doesn't matter and really it's all about political pandering instead of real science. But this is causing quite a bit of consternation and disruption in the Fish and Wildlife Service at a time they really don't need it. So can you give us a little background on Louisiana's marsh habitat first? Let's start there. And for those of you listening, here is in a nutshell. There are far fewer ducks that go to Louisiana than they're used to, and especially there are far fewer mallards that go to Louisiana than they're used to. So Senator Kennedy, some individuals gave him information saying it's all due to flooded corn and all the habitat work being done further up the Mississippi Flyway, so he would like to have a ban imposed on flooding crops. Carrie, you want to start with the Louisiana story?
Well, I think you summed it up pretty well, Charlie. Louisiana is still, I think, the most productive state in the flyway in terms of annual duck harvest, but they're not seeing the numbers of mallards that they once did, 30, 40 years ago. They want a simple solution to a very complex problem, in my opinion, Charlie. Part of the issue is that Louisiana has lost all kinds of habitat, not just the natural habitat along the Gulf Coast. But think about this, Charlie. The acreage used to produce rice in Louisiana, which was a big attractant for all waterfowl, not just mallards, but specklebellies and snow geese, has fallen by 40% since the 1970s. In the 1980s, they used to leave about 400 pounds of rice per acre in the field after harvest. Now it's only 75 pounds an acre. So a major source of duck food in South Louisiana isn't there anymore. And taking out corn up here is not going to do anything about that. Even the rice that's left, Charlie, is often used for crawfish, to raise crawfish as well. And those fields are not welcoming waterfowl. In fact, farmers actually haze them off crawfish ponds to keep them from disrupting that harvest. So, you know, you've got a terrible quality and quantity of the marsh. You have saltwater intrusion. You have less food. Other than that, Charlie, ducks in Louisiana are doing great. And, you know, the bottom line, I think, that people don't want to accept is that if we have good recruitment on the prairies, Louisiana still has a pretty good duck season. If we don't, like everybody else, we struggle. And mallards are not moving south because it's warmer. It's not because of duck. It's not because of flooded corns in places like Missouri, Illinois, and Tennessee. Absolutely not.
So I'm going to get to some facts here in a moment. But Senator Kennedy, as I said, he is well-respected, and he's trying to do the right thing.
I would say as a duck manager, he's a heck of a senator, Charlie.
Let me ask you this. In the 30 years that is cited in his letter to the Fish and Wildlife Service, it does not even mention the loss of habitat in the Louisiana marsh. Can you comment for a moment on the extent of that?
Oh, my Lord. We're probably going to lose we're probably going to lose a football field in the time we're talking on the air, Charlie, in terms of the erosion of the Gulf Coast. Right there. Saltwater intrusion continues to kill off good waterfowl habitat. They're just, if places where I actually walked when I was a kid in Louisiana 40 years ago are now underwater, they don't exist anymore. I don't think the American public knows the extent of this, the impact it has. It's just been terrible. There's so many reasons behind this. Duck hunters, and I'm guilty of this as well, we want simple solutions. There are no simple solutions.
No, that's right. So let's talk just for a second, though, also about why flooding crops is so important to the health, not only of waterfowl, but of all wetland-dependent birds. What happens on the migratory routes with predators, food? I mean, the Illinois River, for example, in its native state, natural state, was loaded with celery and wild rice and tubers and was a Garden of Eden. Today, the only thing that can live in the Illinois River are carp. There's no food at all for waterfowl or wetland-dependent birds. So what do flooded crops do for migratory birds?
Well, for mallards, they provide food in some instances. Most ducks are not necessarily grain eaters. Mallards are. But the main thing that, in my opinion, that it provides is cover. You know, if a duck, no matter if it's a shoveler or a green-winged teal or a mallard, if they're in flooded corn, they are very well protected from an avian raptor. And that, I don't think we can underestimate the importance of that, Charlie. That's really important. It does provide food, but there's also other food along the way. I mean, there's corn in agrarian fields that have been harvested, you know, and no matter what, corn is not the largest part of a duck's diet. To me, it's a bunch of things. It is food to some extent, but I think cover and protection is equally important, maybe even more so.
Well, one of the things that Senator Kennedy's letter did not do, and of course, every hunter in the South thinks the birds are staying further north. It's always been that way. We've been flooding crops and corn in Illinois since the early 1950s. Is it more widespread today? I would think it is. On the other hand, we have so little food in the migratory corridors that if it wasn't Kerry for flooding of crops and flooding of moist soil plants, the birds would simply starve.
Well, that's true, Charlie, but the point remains is that if they banned flooded corn, those private lands would still provide moist soil management and food and wouldn't, you know, I mean, I think, again, getting rid of flooded corn is not going to send mallards heading south, period, no. End of story. And, you know, unfortunately, the senator has been given some really bad information. You know, hunting in flooded corn has been expressly allowed under the Migratory Bird Treaty Reform Act since at least 1973. This has been going on a long time. And even though the mallard flight in Louisiana has dropped quite a bit, it has across the flyways. I mean, nationally, between 1999 and 2022, all mallard harvest dropped 65%, and then the Mississippi flyway, it dropped almost 70%. So, you know, to say this is all due to flooded corn, no, there aren't as many mallards, you know?
Right. Well, on that subject, we'll take a break. And Kerry, when we come back, you've been very involved with this program R3, Recruit, Retain, and reactivate. And I'd like to get some of your thoughts as to where this might be going, if you don't mind. And then also, we'll just continue our conversation, if, as you and I always do, about a few issues in policy. Illinois has set its waterfowl seasons for the future, which are very unpopular, I guess. We may not go there, but we'll see, Carrie. But thank you for taking your time as a Louisiana expert. And for those of you who don't know, Carrie Luff is a native New Orleanian. He knows how to eat gumbo and all those wonderful things with the best of them, and you know how to make a roux. We'll be back in just a moment, but we're leaving Louisiana, Carrie, for the time being. This is Charlie Potter and the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Hiking, camping, and hunting, it's all an adventure in the great outdoors, but nature can be tough. You need to be ready for anything and everything. Chevy Silverado is built to handle the toughest conditions and get you everywhere you want to go worry-free. Silverado's designed to handle the big jobs. It's built for the great outdoors. With over 13,000 pounds of towing capacity and trailering sway control, Silverado can haul the biggest loads on the roughest roads and keep you cool as a Sunday drive. With 8 available cameras and up to 14 different views, it can spot trouble before it gets to you. That's peace of mind. And when you're ready for the backcountry, Chevy Silverado 1500 ZR2 owns the off-road. You name it, we run over it. No wonder it's Motor Trend's 2023 four-wheeler pickup truck of the year. So see your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and check out a Chevy Silverado. It's freedom to explore the great outdoors.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio on this frosty Sunday morning, and it should be frosty. It's January, after all, and the Bears are playing in the afternoon. That's a rarity. That hasn't happened, Carrie, in a number of years. But there'll be lots to talk about that today, Carrie, so we don't need to. Other than to say hopefully the heaters get unplugged on the sidelines of the Rams, as they miraculously did a few weeks ago when another team was in town. So, Carrie, let's talk about R3. You want to describe what it is, and you've been at the lead nationally, as has McGraw, in trying to have this program become more meaningful. And for all of you listening, I think this is one of the really important conversations in conservation, because if the wheel can get turned and the Titanic moves, we could have a profound change on the future of frankly, hunting and conservation in America. So, Carrie, what's the background?
So the background, Charlie, comes down to this. The number of hunters in America has been dropping steadily over the last several decades. Lots of reasons for that. But R3 is a national effort sponsored by natural resource agencies and industry leaders to recruit, reactivate, and retain hunters. In the most common version, there are efforts to bring people into hunting by introducing them to hunting, taking them on first hunts, having programs to teach them about hunting. A lot of money has been spent on it. And unfortunately, Charlie, I don't think we've done anything except maybe slow the tide. We continue to lose hunters. We continue to spend money trying to keep hunters. And, you know, it's just my opinion that the demographic trends of people becoming more urban, busier, less likely to spend weeks in a duck marsh or even a day in a duck marsh, or on a deer stand or in deer camp, they're just all coming together to make it very hard to succeed if your goal is to increase the number of hunters across the country. And that's why I'm interested in it. Are there better ways to sustain the future of hunting without spending a lot of money trying to chase people who may or may not become hunters in the long run?
So is part of the thinking, no matter what happens as population grows, the percentage of hunters as a part of the population is going to decline. And it may decline in real numbers as well as it has been. But is the thinking being that what's really important is for society at large to understand why hunting is central to game wildlife management and why it's central to some economies and cultural heritage. Is that more what you're hoping happens, Kerry, that society, that this program becomes geared towards having a society accept hunting as opposed to recruiting more hunters?
Well, that is my, I can't speak for anybody else's thinking, Charlie, but it's certainly mine. You know, I feel that there will always be some people who will want to hunt. I want them to have the, I want their decision to do so to be honored and respected as long as possible. And I think if you're, as I said, I think, you know, how many people do you know, Charlie, have gone through, say, a hunter education course to learn how to be a safe hunter and then can't find a place to go hunting? This is a common story across America. The years of walking up to a farmer's doorstep, knocking on the door and saying, hey, can I chase a few pheasants around your back 40? They're over, you know, and I don't know how, unless you have family with land to hunt, I don't know how you get started in hunting anymore. Obviously, there are public land, but there's not enough of it. And in some states like Texas, there's almost none of it. So I just think that the barriers to hunting are so high today that we can do a lot of good work to keep people interested in it, but it's a road too far to expect people to the numbers to grow significantly year over year. So I'd like to see us do something more practical.
Well, hopefully you can. I know you've been working on this, and I think you're, from what I'm reading and hearing, you're gaining traction. And for those of you listening, there's a lot of money at stake here. A lot of money is spent on this R3 program, recruit, retain, and reactivate, without convincing results that it's on the right track. So, Kerry, in your work in conservation, if you can have our tax dollars and hunting Pittman-Robertson dollars spent more effectively for the long term, go for it. So thank you for being with us, Kerry. And I have to leave with this thought as we head now into the sort of the end of January. Kerry, it's only 9 months until you can go duck hunting again.
I'm ready.
Thank you all for listening. Next week, I'm going to be talking quite a bit about what is possible in the 250th anniversary of America. We're going to wait to see, but there's going to be an announcement, I think, from the Department of Interior that could be very, very, very interesting. Thank you all for listening. Have a great week in the great outdoors. And Kerry, thank you for being with us.
My pleasure.
This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.